south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Now, before I finish off with this Ecuador thing I've been trying to get through for the last 3 weeks, I'm sure you remember that I've mentioned that Latin Americans are totally in love with anything that comes out of Hollywood. Movies, TV, reality shows, and the like. And you might recall that the translations are often terrible, to the point that if you look through the TV listings in Spanish, for example, you really have no idea what you're going to be watching, although you might be totally familiar with that show in English. For example, here's a movie listing with George Clooney, Kevin Spacey, and Brad Pitt that's been doing the rotations through Latin American TV down here for quite some time. And this is the name of it, or what they call it in Spanish. They call it Hombres de Mente, which means demented men in English. Now, I want you to try to figure out what movie this is in English. You know, the original title. Remember, it's Demented Men. Time's up. You'll never get it anyway. It's Men Who Stare at Goats. Remember that one? Demented Men. That's what they call it in Spanish. I guess it has some logic to it. But why not just call it Men Who Stare at Goats in Spanish? Hombres quien miran cabras. What's so hard about that? All those words exist in Spanish, but that would be way too logical, right? Not that the English title is logical at all till you see the movie, but Demented Men? Come on. For a long time, I just couldn't figure out who in the hell was doing those terrible translations up in Mexico City. That's where all those Hollywood translations are done, by the way. Just look at the credits after any one of those translated movies, and you can see that the translation work was done by a company in Distrito Federal, which is Mexico City. Talk about numbnuts and shit for brains. At first, you wonder how these guys stay in business, how they get the contracts, but it really boils down to the fact that standards are so low in the Latin media world, and the Latin public doesn't know any better. That I guess if you did the proper literal translation of the movie title and, of course, the dialogue the actors are speaking, nobody in Latin America would know the difference anyway. So all you expat wannabes and gonna-bes up there, don't think that that's a job opportunity. Even if you could do it 1,000 times better, bottom line is they'll just keep screwing it up because nobody cares. Okay, how about the Spanish title of this famous first world movie? This one runs every so often, and it's in fact a classic. In Spanish, it's called The Mechanical Fruit. Now, I dare you to try to guess what that one is. Time's up. You'll never get it. Try Clockwork Orange. I'm not kidding you. Down here, they call it The Mechanical Fruit. That really makes sense, right? So believe me, if they could have titles translated like that, imagine what the real dialogue is like. But worse by far are the English songs that become famous when translated into Spanish. Never mind the title translations. While the music is exactly the same and you'll recognize it in an instant yourself, more often than not, the lyrics have absolutely nothing to do with the original lyrics in English. But since when did that ever stop a B-grade Latin talent from plagiarizing and making a few bucks off someone else's work? But then again, Latin America is the land of intellectual property pirates. Meaning, any day of the week, on any busy street corner, you could buy a first-run U.S. Hollywood movie for around a buck. Oh, and on the topic of Latin popular music that's been totally plagiarized and stolen and made into a big hit down here in Latin America, the funniest thing is, to me, when you're sitting in a bar or restaurant and you hear the song come on, you instantly recognize it as some past huge first-world hit. I'm speaking about the music, of course, not the words, because they'll be in Spanish. And the reality is, if you're off the Gringo tourist trail anyway, you're the only one in the whole place that knows it was a stolen, plagiarized hit from the first world. What I'm saying is that everyone in that bar or restaurant thinks it's an original Latin composition. And you know, in kind of a demented way, that's part of the Gringo advantage too. Yep, that word demented does have a way of creeping in now, doesn't it? Anyway, The fact is, millions, if not billions of dollars have been made in the Latin music and media business by plagiarizing hit music from up in the first world, especially the classic music from the 60s and 70s. You hear it all the time, the music as you know it and the words in badly translated Spanish. Anyway, just be prepared if you're down here sitting in a restaurant or a bar to hear a perfect rendition, musically anyway, of a B.J. Thomas or Neil Diamond, Bobby Darin, or just about any 60s or 70s big-time hit. And when the words kick in Spanish, just know the meaning has pretty much nothing to do with the original song. The locals don't know the difference and think it's truly a Latin American product. So that's today's twisted little bit of Latin American sociology. Okay, now, if you remember last week, I was reading an email from one of our boots-on-the-ground guys down in Ecuador. Now, if you remember from the end of last week's show, he really did like Ecuador, but he sees it seems to be changing for the worse now that all the gringos are scrambling to get in. So, let me get to the rest of it now. He says, a whole lot of gringos seem to have brought along with them that first world, quote, service expectation that basically defines the ugly American. That expectation doesn't play real well with some of the upper-class, white-skinned, tall, Spaniard-type Ecuadorians who deal with the public a lot. The gringo public, that is. You do catch scowls and dark looks from people like tour guides and travel agency clerks when somebody in your group starts getting to be a little bit of a pain in the ass. They've obviously put up with all the demanding gringos they care to have at this point. Funny thing is, none of the other gringos in the groups I was with seemed to pick up on that except me. Then he goes on to compare Ecuador with Guatemala. He says, you never see that in Guatemala. The light-skinned types there might act that way with average indigenous guys because of the racism, but they're always all smiles with the gringos. But in Ecuador, you can get away from all that easily enough just by getting off the tourist trail. However, what you can't get away from there is the political climate. It's openly socialist and increasingly authoritarian. And it's President Correa that's leading the charge on all this stuff. And you know, I actually like Correa. He's got some huevos. When Bush wanted to renew the lease on a U.S. military base at Manta, Correa said sure, as long as Ecuador gets to have a base in Miami. You know how that turned out. But he's showing some real scary totalitarian tendencies. He's passed laws that let him shut down any newspaper that criticizes him. And the guy who ran the tour I went on down there told us that he was being careful what he said about other people and businesses when asked for his own opinion. Because, the tour guide said, there had been a recent case he knew of where an American spent a couple of weeks in jail for libeling some other American guy verbally in front of witnesses. Though, I don't know the details on that. Anyway, the tour guide was paranoid about speaking up. That said, Ecuador is also getting worrisome on the financial front. Turns out, there are some relatively new banking regulations that now charge an exit tax on wire transfers out of the country. I don't know the details on that either, but some percentage of every outgoing wire is now taken off the top as a fee that the government scoops up. Yikes. Now, at the risk of offending our lady listeners out there, I'm going to read the next part of this email. I mean, after all, this program is called The Expat Files Living in Latin America, so this is what living in Latin America is like. And if it offends any of you guys and gals out there, well, you could always waste away in Cleveland. Anyway, the email goes on to say, most Ecuadorian women are nothing to write home about. Guatemalan women aren't that great either, compared to a place like Thailand. But the median so-called butt ugly quotient seems a lot higher in Ecuador for women that don't have a lot of Spanish blood. Even if you're not looking for a female companionship, it's still nice to have a decent-looking woman around. Kind of like flowers in a vase on the table or something. But having said all that, the Andes Mountains are incredible and Ecuador is still a great place. I'd go back. Signed, Anonymous. Now, I have to add that the guy that wrote this is a very, very astute traveler, very smart guy, another engineer type again, who isn't afraid to follow his own path all throughout Latin America, all by himself, too. And believe me, he's not one of these guys that comes down 2 weeks every year. He stays for like 6 months at a time. So he does have some pretty heavy boots-on-the-ground experience. Now, in his defense on that last part about the women, I have to say this. It's really not as caveman as it sounds. I think every first-world gringa, if she had her choice, would like to be surrounded by handsome guys, too. You know, kind of like having a nice car in the driveway instead of a junk. It's true, when you're in a country like Bolivia or Ecuador or Guatemala or Peru, where more than half the population is indigenous. In fact, in some of those countries, they make up 70 or 80% of the population. Anyway, it's really true that that Latino mix of European blood and indigenous blood, along with a bit of colonial African slave blood thrown in, created a very wide, striking range of humanity, from butt ugly to exotically beautiful. And unfortunately, in a very classist and racist society, it's the indigenous people who take the heat for being, well, called unattractive by the rest of Latin society. The Latins with more Spanish blood, the Criollos and the Latinos. And of course, what sets the indigenous people apart instantly is that they're often under 5 feet tall. For that and their traditional ways, they take a lot of abuse, like American Indians took the abuse from the white settlers up north. And still do, we all know that. And although upscale Latins and Latinos don't admit this in mixed company or publicly, just like Native Americans up in the first world, down here, the indigenous folks are not considered a handsome race, not even classically beautiful. And that's the firm opinion of the movers and shakers in society, the Criollos, who have a lot of European blood, and the more mixed blood Latinos, who will, by the way, always tell you off the record that they have no indigenous blood themselves, which is pure BS. Seems like everyone down here, when talking about ancestry, tells you about their bloodline of tall, light-skinned Spaniards. And they've always got a nicely framed, faded photo in the living room, some old Spanish guy in Victorian clothes, demonstrating to visitors their tentative link to the old world. By contrast, in a Latino or upper-class Latin family, you'll never see a portrait of an indigenous person. That kind of thing they like to sweep under the rug. Why? Because in Latin America, it's all about race and class. Don't you know that the maids and gardeners and the people that do all the dirty work in Latin America are nearly always indigenous, or mostly indigenous, which endlessly perpetuates the stereotype? That's why the mixed-blooded Latinos and the Criollos use the term Indio as a common insult and a put-down. It's no joke, and they don't say it kindly either. And believe me, you hear it all the time. When somebody pulls a gaffe or does something stupid, they'll say, Indio. Which is why I recommend you take that completely out of your vocabulary, because it's basically the Latin equivalent of using the N-word. So the harsh truth is, down here anyway, the more indigenous blood a person has, the more the Criollos with a lot of European blood and the Latinos with some European blood look down on you. For example, when you look at the beauty pageants down here, which are one of the three national sports, the other two being soccer, their football, and tax evasion. You gotta love that part anyway. But you see, in beauty pageants, unfortunately, the indigenous population are vastly underrepresented and very shortchanged, like with most other things down here. Pure indigenous young girls, no matter how beautiful they might be, are generally so short that they almost never get a crack at a beauty pageant title like that. They're almost always left out. They don't even get a chance to get in the running. Because remember, in Latin America, tall, light-skinned Latinas almost always take the prizes. And in the event a darker-skinned mulatto-type woman snags some kind of title, or is allowed to compete in a well-publicized beauty pageant at all, it almost always has to do with the fact that she's not only beautiful, but she's very tall. By Latin standards, that is. Which means for Latin women, about 5'6" or so. So, how do I know all this stuff? Well, I'm certainly no expert. But since expat Eddie's fiancé is a runway model and a former beauty pageant contestant, I have a pretty good insider's view of what it's all about. Now, that's not to say that in pure indigenous communities, usually way out in the boonies, They don't have their own beauty pageants. Well, they do. In those cases, consisting of pure indigenous contestants, but they get no media or press attention outside their own little communities. The rest of racist Latin America just doesn't give a damn. Now, the thing is, like I said many times before, most of the indigenous people are so short, well under 5 feet tall, including the men, that gringos and people with a lot of European blood just simply tower over them. You ought to come down off the gringo tourist trail and walk into a shopping center and get into an elevator sometime. Even if you're Joe or Jane first world average, you'll tower over everyone in there. And they'll be sneaking peeks at you like you're some kind of jolly green giant. So, sadly, the indigenous population down here has a heavy burden to carry. For one thing, they can rarely break out of their social class unless they become entrepreneurs. And there's that stigma against their traditions and habits and brown color and their lack of height. And worse yet, they're generally poorly educated because they can't afford to go to private school. Therefore, they go to those very crappy public schools. You know the drill. No desks, no water, no windows, and no pencils. Now, in those three countries that I just mentioned, Peru, Ecuador, and Guatemala, the average indigenous woman has about a fifth or sixth grade education. And you know, behind closed doors, you hear the ruling classes and the wealthy say they'd like to keep it that way. Though, two-faced as they are, in public, they'll always give lip service to their, quote, sincere belief that the indigenous folks have to be raised up socially and economically. Sound familiar? What a bunch of hypocritic sociopaths, huh? A touch of home, I'd say, just like the U.S. Congress. But you knew that already. Now, as far as getting into the lookism thing, you know, what's beautiful and what's not in the eye of the beholder, as far as gringos and gringas are concerned, you almost can't avoid getting into a conversation about the subject. I have to admit that if you go into the boonies in any Latin American country or up into the Andes, in a lot of the small towns, even towns of 5 or 10,000, the people often look like they're related. They're in the same family because, well, the town's been so isolated for so many years, that's probably the case. Kind of like those mountain folk clans we all heard about that live up in the Okies. Now, as far as if you think short, brown, similar-looking people are attractive or not, well, it's up to you. And it's true that mixed-blooded Latinos and upper-class European-blooded criollos almost never mix romantically or socially. They consider indigenous people unattractive, and you'll hear them say so, but never in mixed company. That said, I can tell you that in spite of what our last emailer said, that kind of attitude does not necessarily extend to all gringos. The fact is, I can't tell you how many times I've seen a tall, handsome gringo with one of those short, young, indigenous girls hand in hand walking down the street. Now, let me qualify that a bit. Most of the time, they're not American gringos. They're Europeans. I should have said I often see tall, handsome, European, German, British, French, whatever, hand in hand with an indigenous young lady, and the girl would be a foot, 2 or even 3 foot shorter than he is. So obviously the attractiveness thing is very subjective. But on the other side, the fact is, you know, when gringa ladies come down here and hook up with Latin guys, you don't see much of that phenomena in reverse. When gringas seem to hook up, it's almost always with a handsome, young, Don Juan-style Tony Banderas type. Not necessarily tall by our standards, but taller than she is. I guess it's a truism that in every society, a woman wants her man to be, at a minimum, tall enough so she doesn't have to look down on him. Whereas down here in Latin America, especially on the tourist trail, you do occasionally see the gringo or European male with a short indigenous girl, though, like I said, the short indigenous guys have about as much as a snowball's chance in hell of hooking up with a visiting gringa. Go figure. So before I get a lot of hate mail about the lookism thing, I'm here to tell you, like I always do, that down here in Latin America, it's very racist and classist. You think they've got racism and classism and prejudice up in the States? You ain't seen nothing yet. So just thank your lucky stars or the fickle finger of fate that you're a gringo or a gringa, because we have all the advantages down here, really. No matter what color, height, or race we are, we're all considered gringos as long as we were born and bred in the States. And finally, for all you expat file listeners who have friends who are ugly Americans up there, ones that are talking about taking a trip someday down to Latin America, and I don't mean ugly physically, I mean ugly in attitude, tell them if they do come down to Latin America, do everyone a favor and go to Costa Rica, or Panama, or anywhere in Mexico, or direct them to the tourist trail in Ecuador. They'll find a lot of pushy, demanding, asswipe gringos there, so they'll be in good company. Oh, and by the way, just when I thought I was done talking about Ecuador, somebody sent me this. And I'll paraphrase this again so as not to bore the pants off you. Starts out, since I moved to Ecuador a dozen years ago, I've made a point of visiting my friends in Vilcabamba at least once a year. I was enchanted with this peaceful, isolated valley the first time I saw it in 1998. Even considered setting up a business there and living there. However, in the past 2 or 3 years, my friends tell me that things in Vilcabamba are changing for the worst. There are a growing number of gringo real estate scams, and there are those in-your-face conspiracy theorists and back-to-nature zealots in the expat community that are becoming more and more obnoxious. It's the invasion of the ugly Americans, all right. Now, I don't know the details of the bad real estate deals, but I do have great tolerance, even appreciation, for the various oddballs among us gringo expats. For years, Vilcabamba has had the reputation for attracting old hippies and other counterculturists who subscribe to a variety of bizarre ideas. In fact, I enjoy hearing the stories of invisible space aliens walking the village streets, lizard people who reveal themselves only at night, and the life-changing benefits of drinking carrot and broccoli smoothies, and the fact that up to now, no matter how weird your ideas might seem, oddball and seemingly eccentric gringo pursuits were well tolerated. As you might have figured, people down here have a lot of time on their hands. Anyway, on my last trip to Vilcabamba, it was the cab driver who drove me from Loja who made me think that my friends may be right about those ugly American invasions. He told me about a gringa real estate agent who was forced out of the country because she inflated prices, pocketed the difference, then perjured herself in court. He also told me of another gringo or two who were suing each other for character assassination. And then there are all those cases of gringos suing locals and vice versa. Seems like lots of gringo anger has found its way to this little town. And to think I found all that out from the cab driver. Now, what the expats did amongst themselves, the cab driver told me, was really no concern to him or most other locals. What was a problem, though, he said, was that land prices in the valley have tripled in the recent years due to those gringos, the gringo greed. Locals, he said, can no longer afford to buy the land they grew up on. Almost as bad, he said, was the new attitude he noticed among many gringo newcomers. They show no respect for the local people at all. They don't even bother to learn the language, and they expect us to be their servants, he said. The attitude is partly responsible for the rapidly rising crime rate in the valley and the country, he said. I can never say that thieves are justified in what they do, he said, but I also hear the anti-gringo talk amongst the regular citizens in Vilcabamba. The natives are restless. In fact, before I even met my friends, I witnessed evidence of what the driver told me. Within less than an hour, I was approached by two elderly gringo ladies, no less, pushing real estate. One, a stylish matron with what sounded like an Australian accent, told me that I could trust her to find the best deal in town. Another, who I took to be the owner or manager of a cafe where I ate, told me not to listen to anyone but her, and that the other agents were all crooks. Man, you know what? It's me again. It sounds just like Costa Rica, doesn't it? Now, of course, there are elements of the old Vilcabamba that I love and remember. In the cafe run by that real estate sales lady, I sat next to a guy who waved what looked like a laser light over his food and his companion's food, cleansing it, I suppose, of evil spirits and impurities, whatever. Yep, a lot of expats are oddballs. Now, I'm not sure about the invasion of Vilcabamba by ugly Americans. I have seen this species that we're talking about in Mexico, Indonesia, Trinidad, Malta, and Panama, among other places, and I know it all too well. What I can say, however, is that life is not as simple as it used to be in this sacred valley and elsewhere. The gringos who live there today seem more serious, more eager to push their points of view, sell their products, and perhaps more desperate. And from what my friends tell me now, most foreign newcomers seem to burn out more quickly and are gone within a year or two. Which leads me to come back to my conversation with the cab driver to put my finger on the real problem. Foreigners are forcing up the price of real estate. It's a situation that's turned out badly in Mexico and several other Central American countries. He's talking about Costa Rica and Panama, of course. Let's hope, he says, the situation turns around so that these places can once again be safe for expat oddballs. Okay, that's about the gist of it. And my comment? Well, one thing we haven't talked about yet is the fact that it's true. It seems like almost every expat you meet is a kind of an oddball. Well, maybe not an oddball, but just a bit eccentric. But one thing's for sure, you'll find out that most of them, especially the long-term ones, are highly educated. And if not highly educated with degrees and diplomas, they most certainly are smarter than the average guy and come down with a lot of great skills. Which says a lot about average and mediocre people up in the States who might have a wish or a dream to come down to Latin America. Sure, everyone likes a good story and how it's been done by others. But chances are, if you're not a bit bold or eccentric, you probably won't take the leap. If, like all of us certainly realize down here, all of us who've been living here a while, we notice there is a kind of a common denominator of eccentrics here. Now, I'm not talking about loonies or people ready for the rubber room. Not at all. I guess you could say if your friends and relatives up north haven't said you're a bit crazy or obsessive about something or another, then you probably don't fit the pattern of the average expat down here. And it's not that you won't survive or be a success if you're a dead, boring 50 percentile normal. It's just that a certain percentage of new expats, hoping to stay here forever, they end up back in the States with their tails between their legs within a year or two. Just like that last guy was talking about. So anyway, if you do come down, be prepared to meet a lot of eccentric people, if not oddballs. Now, if you're an eccentric or an oddball yourself, you probably won't notice that. I only know I'm a bit different because authority figures had been telling me that since I was about 6 years old. Back then, you know, if you weren't a round peg in a round hole, you caught hell for it. But these days, well, we're way ahead of the curve. And the funny thing is, many new expats and fresh gringos have told me the very same thing. They say, always on the sly, those expats that you meet, especially the long-term ones, they're not like your average guy or gal next door. Just last week, a new expat told me, the expats he's met so far were all a little out there, kind of quirky, but he wouldn't have it any other way.
South of the border, down Mexico way.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And don't forget to check out expatwisdom.com to sign up for your free reports on Latin America. See you next time. Nos vemos. She was a picture.